Basically, to create genetically modified crops or seeds, what you do is you insert a gene that carry a desirable trait or characteristics, such as resistance to disease or tolerance to herbicides or any other kind of high yield, tolerance to salinity or to high temperature or low temperature. So you find the genes that you would like to insert to a conventional crop that you have already there without any chemical involvement.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost your yields with KWS Hybrid Rye featuring Pollen Plus technology. Learn more at kws.com. Grow a carbon crop below your row crop. Add carbon to your balance sheet with Loam Bio.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show, brought to you by Wise Genetics. I'm Brian Arnell, and I'm coming to you from the campus of Oklahoma State University. Today, I'm happy to have on with us Dr. Sabri Elias, Professor of Seed Science and Technology at Oregon State University. Sabri, thank you so much for joining us today.
You are very welcome.
So I always like to ask, can you share with our guests a little bit about your route to Oregon State, a little bit about your background and how you ended up as a professor of seed science and technology?
I got my master's degree and PhD from Michigan State University. And basically, I just love to work with seeds, and I thought this is best, you know, or perfect, you know, setting for me and for my career. Everything starts with seeds, you know, whether we eat, whether we drink, whether we do anything, the seeds is the origin of everything. So, and then after I graduated, I worked a little bit at seed company. Calgene, and then moved to Alabama A&M University. And from there, came to Oregon State. It's a beautiful state. I invite everybody to come and visit us here. Weather is perfect, and it's also great for agriculture.
How long have you been at Oregon State?
This is actually 25 years. When you come to Oregon, you don't want to go anywhere else.
Fantastic. So, Sabri, tell us now a little bit about what your role is at Oregon State and some of the things you're working on.
So, I am a professor of seed science and technology. I teach classes mainly about seed science and technology class on the web. So anybody from any place in the world can sign for this class. And basically, it teach all aspects of seed sciences, like physiology, like chemistry, like quality. And then not only that, and post-harvest technologies. So the first part of what I teach in my course related to seed biology and seed science, and the second part, post-harvest technologies. And also, I teach a class in statistics, experimental design, and data analysis, because I found actually that many of our graduate students take statistics courses, but when they come to do their research, they don't know what kind of experimental design to use when they collect observations, how to analyze their data, what kind of tools to use for that. So almost all my graduate students take another 3 credits with me just to teach them how to analyze their data.
So I would say for me and our audience that the schools are good about teaching statistics, but they may not be good at biometrics. And that is the ability to utilize the statistics properly in agricultural research is something that might be a bit of an art form and does need a little bit of extra teaching. When it comes to Dr. Elias, when it comes to your teaching, your seed quarry, how long have you been teaching that course?
Basically, since I started with graduate students, I teach them, but lately, recently, we opened it in our department, so anybody can come and kind of take my course.
As you look at the students who have taken your seed technology and seed science course over the time you're teaching, has their opinion, the day one walking into the class, have you seen a shift in how the students view seed science and seed technology from maybe 15 years ago?
You know, as you know, there's a different levels of all students. Mm-hmm. Some of them really very interested, and they put the time required and they do the efforts that needed for the class. Some of them a little bit relaxed. So mm-hmm. it's kind of two ways. The material we teach and also how the students respond mm-hmm. to our materials. But basically, the basic science doesn't change too much. But, you know, of course, you know, let's say as genetically modified crops evolved, then we always update our syllabus and incorporate the new science that comes to the seed science.
I guess my comment comes from my teaching, because I've been teaching a nutrient management and a precision ag course for almost 20 years now. If I look at the population of students coming in on day one, the amount of students today who want to farm without inputs, those that want to farm with traditional genetics, are by far much higher than 15 years ago, where the thought of inputs and the thought of genetically modified seeds were not so negatively thought of, at least in our population. We have more students that are interested in not having GMOs, more students interested in not using commercial inputs now than we did 15, 20 years ago.
That's very true. In the big picture, basically, the objective of any agricultural sciences, whether it's seed, wheat production, plant breeding, soil science, is to increase the productivity of the land we have. Mm-hmm. And the ultimate goal is to provide food security for the whole world. So basically, if we give our students the big picture in terms of how to maximize what we have, how to develop improved varieties that kind of fit the weather or the conditions or the climate we have in, using the new technologies, that's our objective. And then you start to focus on the details. For example, do we use herbicides, insecticides? Do we use genetically modified techniques? Do we use a tillage system versus a non-tillage system? So basically, we give the students a big idea and the importance of incorporating new technologies in our science. So it will not only be the academic part of it, but how to apply it and the practices.
Beautiful response, which leads really nicely into, I guess, my first question for you is, why is it that genetically modified crops are such a controversial issue?
Well, I think part of it because of most people don't know enough how we create the genetically modified. They don't, you know, I think genetically modified crops, part of it political, you know, what they hear in the news and in the papers. But we need to educate them about, you know, the advantages and disadvantages. We have to be honest that anything new or anything in the world has positives and negatives. So we have to show them. So I think most of the people who are against GMOs, they basically need more education. You know, they need to know how we developed it. Does it include chemicals or not? What is the effect? If there's any research that really prove with solid evidence that it has a kind of effect on the health or not. So I think part of it is when you don't have knowledge about something, you start just whatever you hear in the media or the newspaper, kind of form your own decision, not based on scientific facts.
Absolutely. And as we talk about GM crops, and I think this is a great opportunity to, you know, educate this audience group, which is a really broad background. Can you share with our audience how are GM crops made? And there's multiple methodologies in modifying crops. Can you kind of walk through some of our procedures for GM or GMCs?
Oh, absolutely. I want to present it in a very simple way. Basically, to create genetically modified crops or seeds, what you do is you insert a gene that carry a desirable trait or characteristics, such as resistance to disease or tolerance to herbicides or any other kind of high yield, tolerance to salinity or to high temperature or low temperature. So you find the genes that you would like to insert to a conventional crop that you have already there without any chemical involvement. So the only change in the existing crop or the conventional crop would be the new added trait. Let's say, just give you an example. You are Brian and you are the same, but you want to change your, let's say, eye color from brown to a green. So basically, you will insert the gene that basically control the color of the eyes, and that will be the only change happens. And it doesn't really involve any chemicals or anything. It's just inserting a certain gene. To apply this for crops, let's say Roundup Ready soybean, all what you do is you insert a gene that tolerate a certain herbicides, in this case glyphosate. Basically, you spray only one herbicides that kills all the weeds, but it will not kill the soybean, which is the crop of desire. having do this, actually, you are cutting off lots of herbicides, to selective herbicides to kill, let's say, broad leaves, weeds, or monocots, leaves, and so forth and so on. So basically, you are improving the performance of your crop by introducing a certain characteristics or desired traits without any other alteration in the crop.
And so you brought it up. The first thought is often the glyphosate resistance gene, but there's been many other applications that we've used genetic modification for in our cropping systems, along with nutrition otherwise. Can you, you know, speak upon some of our applications we've used genetic modification for in cropping systems around the world?
Actually, recently there is some the plant breeders developed soybean with high protein content. Normal protein content for the soybean between 18 and 23. Now you can find protein content of 45%. Now this is significant, especially for third world countries where the animal proteins, let's say from chicken, from meat, from a fish, is not available, readily available, or available with high price. So basically, you are providing a certain nutrition, adding values to some crops. Another example is the rice. which is rich in iron and vitamin A. If you think about rice, that is an essential meal for some of the countries in Asia. If they don't have a vitamin A, they might have some kind of deficiency or abnormalities in their vision. So through the genetically modified techniques, they added both iron and vitamin A. Another good example, they included hepatitis B vaccine in the banana. And so you don't have to worry about, you know, refrigerators in very hot conditions and all this stuff, and so on and so forth. So there is really another example, of course, inserting some genes to alter the chemical composition of some rape seeds, such as lauric acid in canola, and which make kind of wide applications for industrial kind of applications. So that's some examples.
Well, Dr. Alas, so you hit all the ones that I thought of first. You know, I think about the movements of GM and the golden rice, banana, all those hit it. Now we've talked about the applications. What can you provide a drawback? You know, what are some of the limitations or challenges with the utilization of GM?
Again, like anything in the world, it, you know, has some positives and negatives. But the most complaints you can kind of hear from farmers or from growers is they think that it may create weeds that are resistant to, let's say, Roundup herbicides. So after a while, maybe some weeds will have developed resistance, just like, you know, when people take certain medicine and it have high effectiveness during the first part, but over the time, the body builds some kind of tolerance to it. So this is one of the drawbacks. The other one that I heard about is the potential gene flow to the neighboring fields. And of course, for all this, you can think about solutions. For example, for the gene flow, you can have a distance between fields that genetically modified and the conventional varieties in such a way the pollen will not travel, you know, this distance and contaminate. For creating the what they call super weeds or resistant weeds, of course, they can use different herbicides with different modes of action that can kind of control different kind of weeds.
It's time for our famous three.
That's great, Dr. Lass. And I got to admit that we're running out of time already. I've got to move on to some lecture. I get to teach first day here at Oklahoma State. We're starting on start of the semester. Got a couple questions I always love to ask the guests to get to know them a little bit more. First, as you're working through your day, what is a go-to work resource? Where do you go when you have questions or quandaries about your science?
Studies to solve the problems that come from our growers is the best thing. So the first thing to identify the problem. What is the problems or what is the questions we would like to answer? And then we develop a study that address this particular problems and think about what kind of observations that we need to collect in order to answer these questions. And also we have to think about what kind of analysis we would like to do in order to get answer to these questions. So basically, I think research and studies is a way to improve things, to solve problems. And there is nothing to kind of alternative than to include technologies and solve problems than research.
And now the follow-up is where, if somebody wants to go find out more about what you're doing or your classes, be a part of your classes, where do they go to? How can they find out more about your program?
Oh, basically, you go to Oregon State University eCampus, and you find all the informations. And just I would like to let you know that the eCampus programs at Oregon State University in the last 5 years is the top 10. So basically, you can even get a degree in crop science or soil science. The whole degree, you can get it online. You just go to Oregon State University eCampus and you'll find all the answers.
Well, folks, that wraps up another episode of the Crop Science Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today with our guest, Dr. Sabria Elias, Professor of Seed Science and Technology with Oregon State University. You guys remember to subscribe to the channel, click that bell so you can receive notifications every time a new podcast drops, and share the video if you've enjoyed it and learned it with your friends today. Leave us any comments you may have to ask questions to our guest or suggest guests for the future. Sabria, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.